It's Skate Talk with Boomer and the Coach. I'm Boomer.
And I'm the Coach.
And you want to talk heavy hitters on Skate Talk, Coach? We have a heavy hitter with us today, don't we?
I'm telling you what, we went right to almost the top. This is like heavyweight championship of the world right now. Okay, did I lead him in too much? I may have. I don't know.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
No? Okay. We have Eric Steele on us with us tonight at Skate Talk with Boomer and the Coach. Yes! We're excited. How are you, Eric?
Doing great. We're enjoying some fine Nebraska weather that we've waited months for here, and just going to hang out in the backyard here as I'm enjoying my day, end of my day here, and talk with you guys and try to give you some USARS perspective and answer some questions and some things that are out there and just have a good conversation with y'all.
I tell you what, it's just hard to believe as we're talking with Eric Steele, Executive Director, USA Roller Sports, hard to believe that we're sitting here, we're, you know, a week out from Memorial Day, and we're so close to Indoor Nationals, and this is really cool this year. New location for Indoor Nationals, Eric, you guys are Spokane, Washington.
Yeah, it's quite real. We looked at that about it would have been over a year ago now. The spring board meeting is when it kind of came about, and Spokane came in strong with their bid, and we like what we saw up there. It was an opportunity to go as far west as we could, and at the end of the day, you really realize how far it is a little bit because I was mapping out my drive from Lincoln out there.
So if you went any further west, we would have been swimming.
and we'll go out there. We're excited. There's things that are beginning to happen. You can see it in our office. So you've got the lanyards that are coming in that are going to go around the necks. We've got the medals are getting ordered. All that kind of stuff is happening, and as I tell people all the time, there's some stuff we're mega far ahead on with Nationals, and there's some stuff that we're super far behind on. And it's just, I would tell people, put your skates off and put your mindset in your real job and your real life and how crazy that can get. And that's the same thing that happens with us out of the office out of Lincoln is that, we're ahead of the game and we're behind in some areas. But we'll be ready to go. We're going to ship the floor out there. That's a monumental effort. I don't think people sometimes realize what that takes, but it's three semis that pull that thing out there across the country. Yep, and you look at the kind of things that have to get set up with Nationals, but we're excited about it. The regionals are coming up over these next few weeks, and people are going to begin qualifying, and I would tell people to start booking their hotels and get that stuff organized now because Spokane's, from what I can tell, a pretty nice place in the summertime, and it's going to fill up with other people besides roller sports folks out there for that month and a half. So
I can only imagine, doing the local speed meet, doing an outdoor and indoor meet that we did this past year. I loaded up the trailer. I got a 10-foot enclosed trailer. I put my podiums and a couple tents and some coolers and some pylons, and I loaded that in there, and I thought, man, this is a lot of work. And you're saying three semis full of wood going out there for this floor. I'm like,
that's correct.
Oh my gosh. I thought the floor fit in one truck. I had no clue that it's three semi trailers.
Correct. The floor is actually two. It winds up being two flatbeds. And then we have a box truck, and that takes all the hockey equipment and then all the stuff that comes out of our office, too. The computers, the televisions for the lap counts on speed, all that kind of stuff, it's got to make its way out there. Mm-hmm. And people forget, we do four sports. We don't just do one sport. We do four sports, and they're all unique and different. And the only common denominator between them is that they roll and it's on a floor. Other than that, they've got different sets with officials, and you've got to get hotels set up. So it's a pretty big venture. And people often ask, why do we keep it in Lincoln as often as we have? And it's as simple as it's right down the street from our office, and the support that we're able to put on that two out of every 3 years is so much financially better for the organization and saves dollars and so forth. So that's a big reason. And we'll go to Spokane this year, and then we'll head over to Cedar Rapids next year. And I really think that venue, people are going to really like it. It's really unique and built-in seats and so forth. So,
well, I've been a national since 2005, and every year that I've went, it's been, Lincoln, Nebraska, Omaha, Peoria, Fort Wayne, back to Lincoln, New Mexico, which was a trip, a couple of New Mexico trips. But basically, for the most part, it was right here in the middle of the country. And you know what? I guess the West Coast, although I know it kind of stinks for people on the East Coast that think they got to drive all the way out west. You know, the West Coast people traveled all the way out here to Fort Wayne and competed. So the reality is why not give them a one-year free where they don't have to travel either? So I think that's kind of good.
Sure, and Washington out. Is our fifth largest state membership-wise. So that had a little bit to deal with it. And frankly, Spokane had done a lot with NGBs in the past. And that was we were looking for a place that would have that level of understanding what an NGB needs and so forth. So this is how it came about. And when we were looking at Cedar Rapids, I met with a lot of East Coast cities. It come at the end of the day, they didn't put bids in. We had one bid that was east of the Mississippi, and that was it. So we moved forward, and Cedar Rapids emerged, and that's where we'll head. So
on a positive note, we won't have to hear Sean Patterson cry about going to Nashville.
No, you won't. No, but I want to give a shout out to Sean. I mean, he's really been great, and I know that's going to become the rink where a lot of, especially on the figure side, where a lot of the practices will be held at. Yeah. And he's going to support us in a lot of great ways. And the Pattisons are just. They're a great family.
Sean, when I said that, just so you know, Sean's going to get a kick out of that because me and him like to rub each other a little bit. He's a good guy.
Sure. Definitely.
Yeah. And I tell you, I think one of the lures for me, like when I started skating, was the travel. It's like, okay, now I have something that's really cool to do that's going to take me to places I might not typically get to go to.
Right.
So now all of a sudden it's like, okay, here we are. We're in Indiana. I'm not really sure when I'm going to get to Spokane, Washington, which I've always heard is a really cool place. And now all of a sudden, skating is taking you there. So it's good to see that there's other options out there. We can go and do a little bit more and travel
a little
bit more.
But doesn't it rain a lot in Washington?
Yeah, it might. I mean, we'll have to see what that turns out. I mean, I'm a guy that spent my undergrad and graduate days in college just south of Erie, Pennsylvania, so I'm kind of used to the rain, but I think that there's some neat things out there. There's this one thing that's really exciting called the Skate Ribbon that's in Riverfront Park, which is about a 5-minute walk from the venue, and I haven't seen it up close, but I've seen it on television and through the YouTube, and it looks like it's going to be a neat place to, you could break away from Nationals and head over there and do some unique outside skating there.
So
there's some stuff
there.
It's called a Skate Ribbon. Yeah, it's sort of like this. Looks like a ribbon, kind of a track.
It's like the ribbon they got in Chicago that they do ice skating in the wintertime.
They do something with ice skating on it. They could tell me that. So
okay, and it's about the same. Cool.
I think so.
So, I haven't been to Nashville. I didn't go last year. So for any new coach coming out there, let's say I'm a brand new parent and I'm bringing a skater out there, every year it's a little bit different, and every year it's kind of circumstance change. So first time people come into Nationals this year, what can they expect? Is there a gate fee? Is it a closed off parking lot? Is there free parking down the street? Or do I got to feed the meter like I did in Lincoln when it was at the Pershing Center? What's the deal?
So we'll talk a little bit first on what they'll be getting. Everybody, the athletes will get a packet, the officials will get a packet, coaches will get a packet, and vendors will get a packet. They're going to be a lanyard system. We've got an ID badge, and it gets those people in automatically. They don't have to pay because obvious reasons. They're there literally to compete and coach and so forth. We will be looking specifically on the coaches' side at the Safe Sport deal and the criminal background check to make sure that those credentials are up to date, and we've got a new good standing policy. So if there's folks that are even in a financial situation with USA Roller Sports where they owe us money and yet they haven't set up a payment plan or something, they will not make the eligible list, and we're not going to give them credentials. So it's very important to understand those I's need to be dotted and those T's need to be crossed before you get out there. With regard to pricing, it's going to be $15 a day to get into the venue, and then there's actually ticketed people that are going to be there. We won't, in the past, our staff has done all that stuff. The only thing that you'll work with our staff on is getting your registration packet. You'll also be working on getting, you can buy the program and that kind of stuff from us. Okay. And then you'll get your ticket. Ticket's $15 a day. but you have the option to purchase a 3-day package, a 5-day package, or a 7-day package. And so those are winds up being $10 a day if you pick one of the packages. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's a good deal in that regard, and I would recommend to folks to get their package and get it done.
Yeah.
The next part of it will be parking. Seems to be the one area we're having the most difficult time getting information back from Spokane on, and it's my understanding that the city and some of the parking garages around that neck of the woods kind of play off of the time of the year, and so what might be the price currently may not be the price come this summertime. So we're told it, you're looking at numbers, it could be as high as $10 to $15, and it's just going to depend on where you park for the day. But a lot of the hotels are also within walking distance.
Nice.
And so so you should be able to maybe get a deal at your hotel and walk. You know, I personally am not staying at the at a hotel out there. I'll be we're doing a bed and Airbnb deal for me and Brent Benson, our other staff member, since we're going to be there for the whole month.
Yeah.
And we'll have a couple of spaces. I want to think it's around 20 to 25 spaces that'll be set up for our officials and staff, so okay. that they won't have any problem parking when they get in there. So,
nice.
You know, there's some stuff with it. The venue is interesting. It looks like a big boat is a good way to describe it when you look at the floor plan. Yep, looks, it's got a kind of a bow and a stern almost. I don't know if they meant to do that, but it definitely looks like a boat. So somehow we're going to lay two floors down there. Well, we're going to lay one floor down, and then the other one will be a concrete floor for hockey and derby and so forth. So,
okay.
I mean, price-wise, it sounds pretty typical. I mean, there's nothing there that I'm like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe they want $15 a day to park. I mean, that's well, again, fairly typical.
It is typical, but, you know, you get – for the people that go every year, you know, you get spoiled when you go to Lincoln and you're over there at the new facility where it's free parking. You know, there's no admission into the building type of thing, you know, and USARS has been able to do free admission a couple times. They've been able to arrange that and work it out. So this is just one of those times where it's just going to be different. Everybody, you know, anybody that's been there, you know how it is, though. If you give something for free and then now you tell them, you know, it's a dollar, it's like you just, you know, you stabbed them. Oh, my God, I got that buck. I used to get this for free. You know, you guys are cheating me.
You used to download all my music for free. Now you want 99 cents?
Now it's 99 cents or you're getting sued. So,
Well, there's also another way to support USARS in a roundabout way. If you pick one of the hotels that is up on our website and you book through one of them, they're going to be doing a $10 rebate that will be split between the Spokane Sport Commission and USA Roller Sport. So in a roundabout way, we'll recoup a little bit of money as well. And so the dollar bills are there. And you know, we do as well as we can. And what folks sometimes have asked about why our fiscal year is set up to where it ends basically as national ends. So, and then it starts with the season. So from a cash flow perspective, we begin to start to recuperate some cash. It comes back in starting there around that September 1st neck of the woods.
Yeah.
And it's pretty smart how it was set up. So kudos to the volunteers that worked on it over the last few years without an executive director in play to put that in place. So,
yeah. Well, I know that in the skating world in general, there's always, it seems to be, there's never a lack of people that are willing to give and give and give and give, and it seems like it's a small group, but they're mighty. They give all the time and relentlessly. It seems like
monumental.
Yeah.
Our volunteer base is, I wish people could see what I see.
Yeah.
You know, and sit in my desk for just 1 week and really understand the magnitude of passion that goes into it. And, you know, our goal in the office is to work hand in hand with them as best as we can. And, you know, we just want the organization to take positive steps forward. And I think we've done a pretty good job in that in the last 18 months here, coming on board. And I know I've learned a lot from it and have been happy being with it. So.
Hey, now, Eric, I'm curious here, all right? This is going to be Fantasy Nationals, okay?
Okay.
All right, so we know we've got Spokane.
No, you cannot have purple uniforms.
No. I'm just, if it was up to you, if you could say, this is the city I want to have Nationals in, would it be, would you go with Orlando? You could pick any city, regardless
Fort Wayne.
Fort Wayne, regardless of the logistics of getting skaters there, what would be the city that you would pick?
Oh man, it was interesting. Well, Hawaii. there's two stories. You know, Hawaii is the one that obviously comes into play. But you look at there was a story. So we were approached here. I don't know. It was probably a couple months back, and there was a city, a major city in the United States, that is putting a bid in on a future World Roller Games to come here to the United States.
Oh, sweet.
And now it was interesting because they were literally they had some crazy ideas, like a skating floor on top of a skyscraper concept. And I'm open to the idea, you know. And so they asked if we would do an endorsement letter for them, and we were like, absolutely, if it's going to bring it here to the United States. So, but if you know, if you had the dream, if that makes sense, then obviously you would love to go to some place like, you know, Hawaii or the warm weather and easy airports, those types of things. I there's places I've lived in this country that have been great, you know, and I would tell you any of them would be good. But, you know, at the end of the day, the skaters have to be able to put the wheels down and be able to skate. And they've got to be comfortable. And there's the logistics that come when you pick a nationals that sometimes I don't think people see all the time. The biggest thing on it would be airports coming in and making sure that those hotels are fairly close. Those are things that make the skater's life easier when they're unpacking to get ready for nationals. And that's the kind of stuff we want to be able to try to find when we look for those spots. So I would tell you that if the dream spot is in my hometown of Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, and we could pull all that off, then great. And I would tell you if it's in New York City or LA or Las Vegas, we would do that just as much. But for right now, we've got to do what the dollar bills let us do and work with. And we're excited about what the future holds with Spokane and Cedar Rapids, and we've obviously got a 2-year principal deal in place at this point to return to Lincoln in 2021 and 2022.
And then after that's Honolulu.
Yeah.
So.
Honolulu, yeah.
Well, see, I'm the whole time when you mentioned a skyscraper, I'm seeing Al Tinsley look at his write-up slip when a guy rode a guy over the railing and he fell off the skyscraper. And I'm thinking, how did he write this up? Because this guy is literally DQ'd.
It would be interesting to see that. But, you know, down the road, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that the issue that we sometimes face in roller sports is what's the venue and so forth. And you know, I think a lot of times folks always ask, they go, what drives the Olympic thing? You know, why isn't USA Roller Sports getting into the Olympics? Well, it has nothing to do with USA Roller Sports. It has to do with the International Olympic Committee, and it has to do with the city where those Olympics are hosted. And if that city wants to put the infrastructure in order to pull all that off, we were hoping and thinking that Paris looked really good for the 2020. There's a big event that goes under the Eiffel Tower with inline speed skating, and it looked really great. And then out of nowhere, here comes breakdancing. And how'd that happen? Yeah. But we have zero control over that at the USA Roller Sports level. And really, World Skate is the one that influences that more than anything else. So, you know, we'll go and we'll cross our fingers now for LA 2028 and see if it's able to come out here.
So. I'll tell you what, I used to do a mean centipede to Michael Jackson in the 80s, but I don't think I could do anything in the Olympics today.
I think you should do that at practice later.
Well, I could rock back and forth, but I wouldn't go anywhere.
Well, the Olympics are interesting, too, because, you know, I knew things were kind of different here back in the fall. There was a conference I attended, and I went to a luncheon where the e-games conversation was so hot. But it wasn't just about e-games. It was sport betting on e-games. And I was like, well, time out. Wait a minute. I'm in a luncheon, and not with just a couple people. I mean, there was like 700 people in the room. I was like, am I really watching a presentation about sport betting on video games? And that's a real world out there. It's a different universe than it would have been 10 or 15 years. And roller sports, as we go forward, are going to have to adapt to that and figure out ways that we're going to figure into the big puzzle, if that makes sense. So.
Yeah. Well, we got, I mean, again, when you look at just the skating business in general, and you look around at the mom and pop rink that used to be in business back in the day, they opened their building up, they put a mirror ball up, and they played some music, and they had, you know, 150, 200 kids come in on a Friday night. Today, that same roller rink does not do near as well if it doesn't have a laser tag, a mini golf, a pitcher booth, and you sell pizzas on the side. I mean,
correct.
So the reality is if our business is in the sense of skating rinks, which is where we derive our skaters from for the most part, if those businesses are having to alter their business model and structure, then we surely are going to have to do the same thing in the sport if we intend to continue to grow and move forward.
Correct. And you see that a little bit with Derby. You are starting to see it with some speed skating teams that aren't having their clubs in traditional rinks. You know, if they're able to have the opportunity to get a cool venue with a flat surface and it's open air and there's no pillars inside, I would tell you go skate there. You'll probably even in some regards have the privacy that you truly want to get that you sometimes can't get with the rink, because the rink owner needs to bring all the people inside in order to make their dollar bills. So if there's an old airplane hanger out there and it's empty, boy, I'd be going and asking and seeing if it's feasible to have a speed skating club inside there. Okay. So,
So you mentioned Save Sport earlier. And Save Sport has been around for a little bit, but it's fairly new.
Yep.
And I hear people talk, and people will call me up, and they'll say, you know, what do you think of this? And I say, well, I don't have an opinion, because I don't know. I just don't really know. So my question is, and I know that this might be a complex question, and I'm really looking for a simple answer, because I'm kind of simple-minded. So the reality is, I mean, is Save Sport, for the most part, just casting a really wide net, and then and it's hoping to catch the really, really bad elements. However, there's a handful of insignificant people that maybe aren't necessarily bad elements that are going to get snagged in this net? Or is it really right down to the seriousness of only the bad elements are really going to get tangled up in that, and some of the people that are on that outer edge of that net, so to speak, can kind of slip through it?
Yeah. Well, what I would tell you is you know, it's no secret that I had a long career with the Boy Scouts, and you can look at that organization and clearly tell they've had their problems over the years. But one of the things they were able to develop over the time was a youth protection program, and it changed a cultural way of thinking. And it took literally about a 20-year window for that to happen.
Oh, wow.
When you look at what is going on in the sports movement, when I interviewed for the job, and I interviewed in November of 2017, if I remember correctly, it wasn't even mentioned. It was happening, but wasn't even in the interview. And then I'm telling you, the Larry Nassar thing flipped the whole world upside down. And when it did that, and what most people don't seem to understand is, if you look at and try to understand Safe Sport, you have to look at the federal government, for starters, as the top of a triangle. Now picture that line coming down on the first side of the triangle, and it's going to go to the USOC, because that's how the Ted Stevens Act came about. That's the concept of the USOC developed through the federal government. Well, there's a second line that comes down off of that, and that goes directly to Safe Sport, which is an independent body. It's modeled very similar to the changes that needed to happen in the USADA formation, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Well, then coming across between the USOC, the bottom part of the triangle, and Safe Sport forms this up, and in the middle are all these NGBs. And essentially, I would describe it about a year and a half ago, as the Nassar stuff was really beginning to unfold and really blow up at a TV level. Picture a speed skating race where you had 50 skaters, and then you suddenly said, go any direction you want, across the track, up the track, reverse, wherever. And at the end of the day, whoever crosses the finish line first wins. And that's kind of what was happening. 50 NGBs going 50 different directions. A lot of confusion, a lot of trying to figure out what was happening. Early emphasis on everything that could be done, from sexual issues to the bullying to the hazing, those high 9 yards. They get inundated as a result of it, throw in a full investigation from the United States Senate, following a full investigation from the United States House, and you can look at that history and show that roller sports actively participated in those, because we had to, because we're an NGB. The result then now is they've begun to finally fine-tune. They're zeroing in. They're doing the things that need to be there. I'm much more comfortable with it than it, where it is now compared to where it was a year and a half ago. And you're seeing more and more people, because they took the training, understanding what the mandatory reporting is. The dilemma is that some people get caught in a mandatory report that maybe not wasn't necessarily an item that needed to go all the way to SafeSport, but it wound up, it should have been maybe something, it was a membership eligibility issue, or frankly, sometimes could have been handled at the meet director level during an event. And so we have to kind of run through that gauntlet, if that makes sense. And when you look at total investigations within USA Roller Sports, I will tell you it's not a small number, because when you add in the membership eligibility side of it, where that could be reviewed internally by us, the numbers push close to, you know, 70-some incidences. So everybody instantly freaks out and says, we have 70 sex offenders in the organization. That's not that's not what I'm coming at. There's no argument that there are individuals, and the data would show you that they're in every NGB. They're in your churches. They're just in society.
Well, yeah. And they have that sex offender map or whatever, and you can pull it up in any city and find two or three that live right next to them down the street in every city of every town. So.
Correct. But what we're finding is that and I don't know if it sometimes stems from on the track issues, but there is sometimes, oftentimes, such frustration that can happen in the sports where an individual gets so mad at somebody, maybe they lost a race, then that turns into a social media argument, that turns into a coaching argument, that turns into this over here, it comes from this angle, and it's like a spider web that gets real twisted real quick. And a lot of times things are getting reported again that have spun so out of control that had they literally just sat down, maybe the two individuals had a real conversation, then the social media part and the bullying and the hazing side of that all becomes an issue we don't have as much to deal with. The thing that people really, really need to understand is, and I tell skaters it all the time, and I think once they hear it, it makes sense. The person you're arguing with or competing against loves that sport just as much as you do. That's why they're doing it. You're probably on the same page, but you aren't for that current minute. And what happens is you get so angry at one another, you don't take that 10 minutes to just stop, breathe, hash it out, understand that why they're there. And that becomes the flooding part of the safe sport side. And then that takes away from really our major issues, which are those sexual issues that do come up, and the ones that are really scary, and they do happen. It's just a cold reality. So we have been able to close a lot of cases. We've had some suspensions that have been lifetime. It's no secret. They're up on the safe sport page. And but it won't take 20 years for the world of sports like it did the Boy Scouts to get to that point. I think it's going to happen in a 5 to 6 year period, but it isn't going to happen overnight. So I always tell people that you just have to, when you're confused about stuff, give me a call. Let's walk through it. Let's see if there's a way to get to the solution. And we go from there. And every case is a puzzle. Every single case is a puzzle.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of time for me to put that puzzle together.
Well, and it's a new system, you know, so it's, again, it's another challenging thing to figure out.
Yep.
And to move forward. So, so before the interview, I try to post out just so people know who I'm going to be interviewing that night, so we can, because we're recording, we're not doing it live.
Sure,
so
sure.
Gives people a chance to ask questions. And yep. And we try to keep it positive, and I hope that we can keep this positive, although it's kind of a negative question in my opinion, but I think we can keep this positive. There's a coach that commented, and he basically said SafeSport is supposed to be a tool used to keep the kids safe, not used as a weapon to retaliate against other folks. So
yeah,
I mean, the question is it are we in a situation where, because again, it's brand new. And anytime yep. something's brand new, you know, people will—they'll try to exploit new things to benefit
sure they will.
Themselves. So, are we able to, as an organization, or is there situations where maybe in the introduction of this, people have actually done that? They've used it as a weapon, and USARS is trying to figure out how do we eliminate the weaponization of this and keep it
yep.
for protection. I mean, is that something that's in the works? Is that something USARS is actively pursuing to try to make sure that we're not weaponizing it?
Yeah, no, it's a real issue, and it does happen from time to time. I will tell you that falsified reports come with penalties if we're able to prove that part. If it gets to that point, though, it's not going to really fall on roller sports to do that. It falls to the center out there to look and see if the report is proven as a false report. It doesn't happen that often, but it does happen. Okay. And the other part of it that I will tell you is that, yeah, it becomes a weapon. You know, you no longer have to, you know, unfortunately the Tonya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan method.
Yeah.
That's out the door now. You know, I mean, you're more powerful with a keyboard. The problem is that Safe Sport and USA Roller Sports has to absolutely, in every situation, take the allegation at face value. And that's the dilemma. You can't doubt it for one second. And if I doubt it, then I put the organization in jeopardy. I put maybe the person that was reporting it in jeopardy. I put myself in jeopardy. We've got to, again, remember the puzzle. I have to put that puzzle together every single time. And it's a big reason right now at USA Roller Sports level, we have two people in our office that deal with these, myself and then Tina Brendel, who is our membership services director. She kind of coordinates the folders side of it all. Sometimes we'll do some of the question asking that we need to do on the documentation side. But most of those come through me, and the reports go straight over up to. And that was something that I adopted and brought in from the Boy Scout side, because that was the method they used in a local office. And it's working in our world. There had been no true guidelines. The only guidelines that were really coming down from Safe Sport was everybody had to be a mandatory reporter. End of story. Well, there's being a mandatory reporter, but then there's knowing how to navigate the waters, dealing with the legal side of things and so forth. And I've had 20 years of dealing with that in my career. So we just adopted those policies, but it does happen. It doesn't happen often. And the one I will tell you where people can really get themselves in a twist on will be if they've been coming up as what's called the respondent, old terminology would be accused. But if the respondent instantly goes out and begins retaliating, you know, after the accusation comes in, that's one you can get in some big hot water on quickly. You can get in some hot water if you abuse the process that they're going through on the investigation. And you can get in some real hot water if you've known about something and you're not reporting and you tend to aid and abet. So an example would be, let's say you were a coach or a meet director and you knew something was going on, but you just said, oh, that's so-and-so, and you let him skate anyhow. You're putting yourself in jeopardy just as much as the actual individual committing the committing the act.
Okay.
So that's a form, I think, at least the way I sort of look at it from my role, was a way that Safe Sport was able to sort of develop a little bit of a self-policing moment. Mm-hmm. Where you need it. We don't have, I don't have 300 USA Roller Sports offices around the country. There's 350 some clubs.
Right.
So I need the clubs. I need those coaches, those parents.
Checks and balances.
Yeah.
That's correct. And they become my eyes in those areas, and they're the ones that are reporting. So
sure.
That's how we're able to do some stuff. So
good.
It's a big issue, but I would tell you it is an issue that is what we think is slowly becoming now to plateau a little bit. We're seeing some consistency and some stuff. And the number one thing, there's two big things I do want to touch base on before we get off this subject. One, I had done a Facebook live deal here a couple weeks ago, and there was two things I had brought up that I thought I knew the answer on, and we said it because that was what I knew at the time. But Safe Sport clarified a couple things. One is, it's our understanding, I had initially reported that if you took the training and didn't take your refresher course every year, you had to go back and retake the full 90-minute training. That's not true. You just have to go back and take the refresher if your course lapses. So that's good news. It's actually easier. And then the other one that's going to be coming down, they had the language was a little bit loose, and we were able to, I think, run the gauntlet with it for a while, but there's a lot of language on what's called frequent contact. And this was permitting, we looked at it from the perspective that, you know, athletes over the age of 18 didn't necessarily have to do that unless they had the frequent contact. But what we're finding and what the center is describing as frequent contact is, even if you're in a rink, and you've got, say, a tiny tot division on that team, you may have nothing to do with them as a skater on that club, but you're in frequent contact. You're in the same area those kids are. And so we're going to most likely, it's not official yet, but based on the language we're seeing, anybody in the organization that's over the age of 18 is going to have their safe sport training, not their criminal background check, just their training done for the start of the season. So that's not bad. It's just sitting down and getting a little education at the computer for an hour and you're good to go. But you're going to have to do that most likely from what we're seeing coming down.
Well, more education never really hurt anybody.
No. And if it's 1 hour and we're making the sport safe, we're making our athletes safe,
that's
we're
correct.
Making it safe for everyone, it's definitely worth the time.
So using your number of 20 years for the Boy Scouts, hopefully it doesn't take roller skating 20 years to rebound and get a more positive growth. So let's go ahead and knock on wood and say our prayers that we can get this done in a few years and make that transition. But you are absolutely right on the culture thing. I know that I read a lot of proactive coaching messages and stuff, and one of the big things they talk about is having a bad culture. And if you have bad, like, you know, if you're number one person on any sport or any team or anything, if the number one person is kind of cancerous for that entity, that organization or what have you, that person will literally bring you down and keep you from moving forward. So sometimes you have to remove the best person to give the underlings that are not necessarily the best people, but they're the people that have a good culture about themselves. And then they end up flourishing and becoming a better organization, a better entity, a better sport, a better team, this, that, and the other. So,
and you're seeing that out of the USOC with athletes first thinking. Okay. It is clear they have changed their whole attitude out there and thought process in the last year. And you're going to see more of that. You're going to see that in our strategic plan that's coming down the pike, an athletes first kind of thinking and so forth. So those are stuff that I think is critical. And we're excited about it.
Wow.
And, you know, we can get better. So,
man, I'll tell you what, Eric, time gets away from us so fast here at Skate Talk. I mean, it feels like we've only been talking for about 3 minutes and we've been here for a long time. And, but it's been really good having you on. It's exciting having you on. I'm gonna lay it out there, and if I make somebody mad or I upset somebody, I'm sorry that you have that soft of feelings. But it has frustrated us to no end that we struggle to get someone from USARS on our show. We've been trying for years to get somebody from USARS, and the only person I was ever able to get on the show was Ricky Porter, and it was not talking about USARS, it was about her own personal life. I couldn't get a USARS member to talk USARS on our show, and I didn't understand it, so thank you so much.
I think Gypsy did a pretty good job.
Gypsy's amazing, but you know what?
And
Gypsy's a buddy of mine. I wanted someone I didn't know.
You know, I gotcha.
You know, I wanted someone that didn't know me that says, hey, you know what, we're going to give these guys a chance because, you know, we're afraid we're going to get hammered, or we're afraid we're going to get picked on, and the reality is, if anybody knows anything about Skate Talk, it's all about the growth of the sport. It's all about people being happy doing what they're doing, and that's what we're all about. So thank you so much for coming on. We do surely appreciate it.
We certainly do.
No, I appreciate it too, guys, and that's something I want to leave it with is, you know, I'm not perfect, but I truly am an Eagle Scout in that sense. I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, I have nothing to gain with it. I may tell you what you don't want to hear, but, you know, the realities are I'm a big transparency believer. I want to give stuff out there. You know, one thing I'm super excited about, and we're going to try to do it, not going to happen, I don't think, this fall just yet, but we want to be able to get some sort of an annual report out to you as well at some point, and it's going to have some of our numbers and some of our highlights and stuff on the year. And
nice.
So I'll leave you with some coaching advice given me by an amazing coach of Jay Ingram.
Oh, don't he's a great
try
guy
to do
too.
It. Don't try to do it. Either do it or do not do it, period. There's no such thing as trying. You either do it or you don't do it. So do
it. Well, I have it in my personal goals to get done, so
it's gonna
I
get
can
done.
Tell you
I
that
got faith
it's going to get done. So
no trying. Okay. You'll get it done.
And I tell you what, Eric, after everything dies down from Nationals, that month you're spending out in Spokane, we've got to get you back on the show to get the Nationals recap, okay?
You got it. That's a promise, guys.
All right, Eric. Well, enjoy the sun out there while it lasts, and we'll get you in a few weeks here.
Great, guys. You have a good day.
You too, as well.
Thanks. It's Skate Talk with Boomer and the Coach. I'm Boomer.
And I'm the Coach.
Skate fast.
And turn left.